Good evening and welcome to the May 20th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. Thank you for your participation. Can we start with introductions?
Adrian Hampton, Central Kitsap.
Tammy Bowen, North Kitsap.
Good evening, Richard Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Ashley Hall, South Kitsap.
Caleb Nelson, South Kitsap.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Thank you very much.
And then we have David Fleet online.
I didn't see him. David? There he is.
David Fleet, North Kitsap. I do apologize.
Okay, this is going to be a hybrid meeting. Please silence all electronic devices during the meeting. If you're attending in person, please refrain from conversation with others so to allow a clear, audible recording for the meeting. For those wishing to comment, please state your name, the general area where you, in the county where you live, when you begin your comments. There are four available options. Those in attendance can raise their hand to indicate that you wish to speak. The chair will recognize you when it's time to come to the podium to speak. In public hearing, there will be a sign-up sheet in the back, which will allow you to sign up for the public hearing. Those attending by Zoom can click the Raise Your Hand feature to indicate you wish to comment. Your name will be called and the link will be unmuted. Phone attendees can dial *9 to indicate they wish to comment. The last four numbers of your phone number will be called, and the number will be unmuted. You may have to touch *6 to unmute your phone. The final method is to provide written comments to the staff at cjewel@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. the day preceding the meeting. Written comments should include the date of the meeting, the comments they are meant for, commenter's name, general area of residence, and the agenda item that you're addressing. For the public hearing, we will have a general limit of 3 minutes. For the general comment period, it will be 2 minutes. Since this is going to be mostly a public hearing, I would recommend that if you have comments for the public hearing, you do it during the public hearing rather than the general comment period. First item of business is to adopt the agenda.
Mr. Chair, I move that we amend the agenda this evening to shift the items G and F, to switch them around. On staff's assurance, item G is going to be very quick.
Second.
David Leet, second.
Any questions, comments? Vote, all in favor? Sold. Second item is adoption of the minutes.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the minutes presented by staff for the May 6th meeting.
Second.
Any comments or additions? Hearing no comments, all in favor? So, that brings us to the general comment period. First one, limited to 2 minutes per person. Do we have any general comments?
We have some virtual comments.
Okay. Let's start at the top. Lisa Hurt.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, hi, my name is Lisa Hurt, and I have lived in Kitsap County for 60 years. 8 years ago, I started actively joining groups and getting involved in local politics. with the hope of helping to keep Kitsap the treasure that it is, a beautiful, lush oasis of nature. We are a unique area surrounded by water and mountains and still have some forests and wild animals which are quickly disappearing. I've come to realize that the whole planning process is systematically corrupt and favors development above all else. There seems to be a pattern with the process, whether it is large development or a large plan. Someone has an idea. An expensive plan is made by a contracted firm. Public meetings are held to get public input. There is a considerable amount of time and effort made by the public reading and understanding these plans so that they can make informed comments at these meetings. It turns out that the comments do not even have to be considered. Having public meetings is just like a box to be checked off for the process to get a draft passed or grants funded. A perfect example of this is the 2025 PROS plan. The process, codes, and laws seem to undermine all attempts by the public to make their wants of keeping intact rural spaces a reality. Our commissioners depend on informed information from our public servants. It seems many of these offices have been infiltrated and swayed by developers. Backroom deals, quid pro quo, bait and switch. I've seen it all, and literally I'm disgusted at what's going on in this county. Development is out of control. So please stop, think, listen to the birds, go outside and take a walk, hear the wind in the trees, listen to your neighbors. This is what we need to listen to, not the developers. Take a good look at what's disappearing, because once it's gone, it can never be replaced. Thank you.
I just want to remind people who are here who want to testify on the PROS plan, for you to be part of the record that we can consider, or to be part of the record if you want to challenge what happens with this plan, you must testify during the public record or the public hearing time. A comment during the general comment period will not be considered. It is not part of the record. So if you have a general comment that's not related to the PROS plan, now's a good time to give us that. If you want to talk about the PROS plan, please wait until the public hearing is opened.
You want me to say it again later?
As of right now, Ms. Hurt, you are not part of the record for this. It's just a matter of law. You're not part of the record.
But you've all heard what I had to say. Yeah. So, okay.
Next. Sharon Begani.
Yes, I think I am here to speak about the PROS plan as well. So I guess I will wait until the public hearing time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Any comments from the room? General comments. Hearing none, we will shut down the general comment period. That brings us to the findings of fact for the admin code edit. Staff will present the findings of fact.
Good evening, commissioners. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. For the record, Colin Poff, long-range planning supervisor. I appreciate your time tonight and letting me go first. I do believe my portion should be rather brief, and then we'll leave time for everyone here that would like to participate in the public hearing tonight. Tonight's meeting is just to review and to approve the findings of fact for the 2025 administrative code edits. If you recall, these are more minor miscellaneous edits that are made to Title 16 land division and Title 17 zoning. And we've had a series of meetings to go over those edits, including a briefing and a work study, public hearing. And then most recently on May 6th, we had deliberations. So we went through each of the amendments and reviewed, and there was a motion that was passed by Planning Commission to approve the 2025 Administrative Code edits as presented by staff and as amended by Planning Commission. So if I'll just take a moment here and show the findings of fact document on my screen. Just a moment. Is everyone seeing the findings of fact here okay? So this would be the findings of fact document. It just consists of three sections, starting with the general findings. Section two is our general procedural findings. So that would be all of our public outreach, briefings, work studies, public comment periods, public hearing. Those dates are listed here. And section three is our general substantive findings about the proposed code amendments and their consistency with the Rough Management Act, the County Comprehensive Plan, other applicable laws and policies and language of that nature. So moving on to the end of the findings of fact, you can see that the recommendation that was made 2 weeks ago is shown here to adopt the 2025 Administrative Code edits as proposed by staff and as admitted by Planning Commission. I also want to mention that any motions that were made during deliberations will be captured in a findings of fact document. And we want to be clear about what those are. So we have, we include the deliberations table. So if you recall deliberations, we went through that table. That's attached to these findings of fact. And if I just really briefly put that on my screen, this is attachment to that table. And it would show the various edits that we went through, but also on the far right column, the Planning Commission recommendation. And there was one motion that was made in deliberations relating to the definition of outdoor school, and that language is reflected here. So the findings of fact would include that motion by adopting this table and this far right column. So I hope that's clear, but I just wanted to present the findings of fact that you have in front of you. And if you have any questions for me, please let me know. Thank you.
Any questions? Hearing none.
Oh, Planning Commissioner Hampton has a question.
Not a question, but a comment. I just wanted to thank DCD staff for your review and your thoughtful review and thoughtful process to making these amendments. So just want to say that your time and expertise is most appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
No further questions? Does anybody have a motion?
And with that, I would like to make a motion. I move to approve the findings of fact for the 2025 Administrative Code edits.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand in the affirmative. Motion passes.
Thank you, commissioners. Have a good night.
That brings us to the beginning of the public hearing, Parks and Recreation Open Space Plan.
Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. Sorry about that. My name is Alex Wisniewski. I am the Parks Director for Kitsap County. I'm here with Carmen Smith again tonight, Parks Planner for the Parks Department. And we are here to do a very brief introduction on the PROS plan, the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space plan that we presented on a couple weeks ago as an effort to open this up for the public hearing and public comment. As a refresher, PROS plan, what is it? The PROS plan ultimately ends up as a six-year strategic plan for the department. It ends up with two outputs, goals and objectives section and capital improvement section. Together, these help guide department decisions, lead policy development, and become the foundation of our annual update to our capital improvement projects that are proposed to the county commissioners as part of our annual budget. The PROS plans are also meet a couple requirements. Through the Growth Management Act, the GMA requires that a planning document be developed for parks and open space, and in large part, the PROS plan becomes that effort for Kitsap County. PROS plans themselves are also required for the department and the county to be eligible for RCO grants, which we utilize in large part for our capital improvement projects to help leverage the public dollars to carry out these park improvement projects. And lastly, as I mentioned before, it's just darn good practice. This is a good opportunity on a repetitive basis for us to engage with the community and ensure that the goals and objectives that are guiding the department and the projects that we are planning on doing are based on public engagement, based on community involvement, and keep the department relevant with regards to public desires. How is it developed? It is six different elements or six different sections within it. These are driven by the manual number 2 from the Recreation and Conservation Office. These include goals and objectives, an inventory analysis, public involvement, demand and need analysis, the CFP plan, and the last one is adoption. This graphic, I don't believe we shared before, but we felt like this was a good opportunity to talk about this. This is a graphic we used in our public presentation when we talked about the PROS plan and the process that went into it. What you have on this screen here across the bottom are three different community-based surveys that we went out to the Kitsap County public with. Each survey built on the results from the previous survey, and it went through, you can see the themes were developed based on the results of survey number 1. Those were crafted then into questions for the visioning survey of survey number 2, which helped results from that, refined those themes, and then those helped us move into survey number 3, which helped bring that down to specific projects and priorities for the department. While this process was happening, there was a lot of other things happening, and that is the arcing arrow across the top of this. And during this time, we did have a consultant on board who was going and visiting our park system, doing a park system analysis of how many parks do we have, what are their physical conditions, what are the type of work that needs to go into maintaining them, where are we, what's our gap analysis across the community, where areas where we might need to focus on for growth. We held stakeholder interviews. Those were one-on-one interviews, and sometimes those were kind of group interviews from stakeholders representing like segments of the community. We had public open houses. We had one in North South Central. These were synced up with our survey number 2. So we were able to capture input for that survey number 2, both in writing, in person, as well as via a online mechanism. We had tabling and presentations across the county at different times at different events to help get the word out about the PROS plan and to get people to participate. We held a staff workshop with the consultant as well. Our Parks Department staff, getting feedback from the community is of the utmost importance, but our staff who work in these facilities and visit these parks on a daily basis have intimate knowledge and understanding, too, of their physical conditions. And so having their participate in the process is really important. So we held that. And we conducted a youth-specific survey, which we were sent out through the school system, through this school districts at the end of last year in an effort to try and amplify input from our youth in the community. Ultimately, all of this kind of gets coalesced and results with the two outputs I just mentioned. And those are the goals and objectives and the capital facilities plan list. And together, these meet the needs of RCO and become kind of some of the guidance for the department for moving forward.
Good evening. Again, for the record, my name is Carmen Smith, Parks Planner. I'll be finishing out the slides this evening. So this is a refresher as well about the public comment period. The draft plan was released February 10th for a 5-week public comment period, so running through mid-March. We received comments primarily through an online form that we created to do so, but also through three community meetings and presentations that we held, one in North Central South during that comment period. There was also a Parks Advisory Board standard monthly meeting where some folks provided comments there. And then lastly, a few comments coming in directly via email. So we've received a total of 447 during that 5-week public comment period. But while we're on public comment, we also wanted to touch on, right now we're in a 2-week public comment period for the hearing this evening, and we've received comments coming in. And so we wanted to take a moment to address those with the planning commissioners. So many of the comments are on a couple of specific topics. So we just wanted to go through each of those and provide a little bit of department context and response. So the majority of comments coming in relate to the county's heritage parks, and specifically comments opposed to proposed significant changes to the management structure of heritage parks, and folks opposed to any athletic facilities or paved trails or development within the heritage parks, and folks expressing wanting to see those areas preserved for habitat, for passive recreation, preserved as natural areas, especially given development pressures that's going on in the area. And then specifically to Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park, there are a number of comments where folks indicating they're opposed to the proposed reclassification to a regional park. So just wanted to provide a little bit of context and response back. The PROS plan is its high-level policy document. It does not propose management changes for heritage parks, and it does not propose any athletic facilities, sports fields, facilities within the county's heritage parks. Something that may be causing maybe a little bit of misunderstanding or confusion is there is a separate project, if you're familiar with the North Kitsap United project happening in, or proposed in the North Kitsap area, is adjacent to Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park, but is not within the park. It's on private property and is not a Parks Department project. But that project proposes, I think, in addition to housing, a YMCA and some ball fields or sports facilities. So wanted to clearly delineate that from what is in the PROS plan and what is within Parks Department jurisdiction. Also, on comments about specific pedestrian-only trails or designating trails for certain users, again, the PROS plan is really high level. It's not getting into that level of detail. That would be more appropriate and will occur as part of park-specific planning efforts. I mean, the department does and will continue to provide planning engagement opportunities for those specific park development or park planning projects. Last point here on the Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park and Regional Park reclassification. Port Gamble already has development that's consistent with the regional park definition. With the mountain bike ride park that's located in the northern portion of the park. These are parks that are drawing visitors from a wider radius. Folks are staying for a long time at the park, and it's just a large facility. But also important to note is in the definition of regional parks, in addition to active recreation, there's also prioritization of preserving natural landscapes within the park. So on its own, the park classification does not dictate management practices. It does not dictate what uses are allowed within a park. That is a more involved park planning process that will occur with opportunities for public engagement. We're also receiving comments about the park's volunteer program, and in particular stewardship groups, and even more in particular related to heritage park stewardship groups. On this, wanted to note that these, the PROS plan is not providing information on specific operations for specific programs such as the volunteer program within the department. It's not proposing any changes to the volunteer program in the PROS plan. The PROS plan points out the value of volunteers and has a number of objectives about fostering volunteer opportunities within the department, and the department will continue to do so. But just wanted to note there that there's not proposed changes to the stewardship or volunteer program within the PROS plan. Last comment theme is about the plan's relationship to existing other plans, so the 2018 PROS plan, which this plan is an update of, as well as the county's comprehensive plan that was recently adopted at the end of 2024. Comments related to this were primarily focused on that the plan, the current plan, is not an update of the 2018 plan. It's not based on it, and that it contains irrelevant information, and that the plan is also not aligned with the county's comprehensive plan. So just quickly on that, we wanted to note that the 2025 plan does carry forward many of the concepts that are contained within the 2018 plan, but it also includes an updated elements as required by RCO. It includes updated inventory analysis of our system. That's changed since the 2018 planning effort. It also includes an updated demand need analysis, updated engagement, updated capital section. And goals and objectives have been reorganized to align with the department's five program areas. Many of the themes and concepts are carried forward. They're just reorganized to align closely with how our department operates and to make sure that all the program areas that we touched on in previous briefings, we have admin, we have planning and capital, natural resources, maintenance and operations, and events and marketing. So they're also making sure that all of those program areas are represented and have goals that speak to what those program areas do and offer within the plan. So. On that, moving forward. So this is just a little bit of context of where we've been with the Planning Commission. We were first here back in mid-April. We provided a very high-level, quick briefing about what the PROS plan is. We were here a couple weeks ago, May 6th, for a more in-depth work-study session with you all. And the list there is just what we covered, and it was basically walked through what is in the plan, went through each of the chapters, and what those contain, and then we talked a bit about the themes and what we heard from that big five-week public comment period and any edits we made in response to those comments. And then we touched on next steps, which is where this slide is going as well. So this just breaks out a bit more of where we've been and where we're going. So highlighted there in the darker blue, of course, is tonight. We are at the public hearing for the draft PROS plan. And then you'll see we've got two more meetings scheduled with you all, June 3rd for our deliberations, and then June 17th for our findings of fact. So after the Planning Commission process, we will move forward with a similar process with the Board of County Commissioners, and we'll be on to an approval process with the State Recreation and Conservation Office. On that, that is the presentation that staff has prepared.
Carmen, I do have a question about the comments you talked about at the last about management. Okay, and having watched what incredible work the steward groups did in Newberry Hill Heritage Park and the Illahi Park in Central Kitsap, we couldn't have done anything with where we are now without those stewardship groups. And it does seem to me, looking at the language in the PROS plan, that we're changing from a partnership language into more of a, hey, you guys work for us kind of approach. And I think some of the public comments we've heard is, boy, there's no faster way to turn off a volunteer than to say, hey, go here and pull weeds, when that wasn't what they wanted to do, kind of thing. So can you speak to the fact that, no, we're not changing? I guess the final thing is, I didn't see, instead of the word volunteer, a lot of it is stewards, I think is a better description of what these people do. So if you could speak to that, I'd appreciate it.
I might phone a friend here.
Yeah, thanks for the question. The way that we contextualize our volunteer program is the stewardship groups are a component within that. They are part of our volunteer program. We have other buckets of volunteers too. We have Adopt-a-Park volunteers, we have Adopt-a-Trail volunteers, and we have Adopt-a-Spot, which is kind of a joint effort through us and the Public Works Department. And so they have different focus areas, different purposes, and different tasks, and different levels of agreement that are carried out. With regards to the stewardship groups, they have done a lot for the department in the past. I don't think that anybody can discount that. They have done all sorts of stuff from trail brush work and manual labor, such as, like you mentioned, pulling weeds, to assisting with developing park management plans and doing other kind of park master plan, capital improvement project stuff. None of those tasks are meant to go away or be reflected in the PROS plan as if they are being disappeared. All of those activities and opportunities for participation will still exist. We still have 140 miles of trails that we need to do work on. We don't have the staff or crews to do it all ourselves. We will still need to have assistance from community members, community groups, volunteers to help work on that. We will still need assistance with other manual labor, such as pulling weeds too. I mean, in all, we have 11,400 acres, and most of what we need and where we lack is manual labor. And so that is a large part of our emphasis in terms of where we are, you know, trying to attract folks to assist us for those weekend work parties. And then when we are doing park management plans and having those project development opportunities, we intend to not only, you know, invite the public into that process, but we'll also be looking to create steering committees, which will in large part bring in those specialized experiences, whether it's from a stewardship group, if that project is a park that has one, we would look to bring that in, as well as other community groups that may be stakeholders in those parks as well. And so we would look to kind of create this collaboration of community members to assist with the development of these park management plans. But what we're trying to say is, We aren't doing planning in a forever open phase where it is constant, constant, constant. And so unless there is a project that is in motion, we don't always need the input on how we should be managing the department, on how the parks should be managed, on how decisions should be made for the parks themselves. We create these management plans. They help the department guide decisions of those parks, and then we implement. So I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Hearing no other questions, we will open the session for a public hearing. In general, 3 minutes per person. Let's start with the people that are out in the community. That would probably be Pat, I would think.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Patricia Wiegand from North Kitsap. All of us should worry about one of the most important crises we face today, climate change, especially those at this meeting who have the responsibility to choose a PROS plan that will affect the health and well-being of this community. The Kitsap emissions analysis tells us that in 2019, carbon emissions per person were 12 metric tons of CO2e, mostly from increased electrical need, mirroring the change in population here, tree loss, and road transportation. This amount is about four times more than the recommended per person CO2 emission to reduce global warming. Current research on carbon capture and storage tells us that a complex forest of diverse trees, flora, microbes, insects, fungi, and animals all working together can capture and store tons of carbon. But this is an intricate balance, easily interrupted by high intense recreational activity and overuse, which also affects the park's visitor experience. Every action in this plan should answer the question, how does this action mitigate climate change? How are we affecting the health and well-being of people who live here now? The proposed post plan has made some positive moves in this direction in the environmental protection section, page 20, to protect wildlife and habitat and classify many parks as nature parks for passive recreation and protecting natural habitats and biodiversity, which will also enhance carbon capture and storage. But the plan needs to go further by classifying a large part of Port Gamble Heritage Park's 3,395 acres as a nature preserve, creating a complex forest capable of storing huge amounts of carbon. There is enough current research to use as a guide to turn tree plantations into places that can efficiently store carbon and contribute to the economy as an ecotourism destination while enhancing the health of the members of this community now and in the future. Thank you.
Sharon Pagani.
Yes. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My name is Sharon Pagani, and I live in North Kitsap. I walk in Port Gamble almost every day. My husband and I were drawn here due to the community commitment to the natural spaces here in Kitsap. Before moving here full-time, we took the WSU Water Stewardship Programs, learning how vital it is to protect wild corridors, not only for their beauty and the species found in them, but for our own health, flourishing, and quality of life. Those experiences changed our whole way of thinking. In fact, so much so that I currently work for those programs. You see, we moved here from an area of the Southwest where most people have very little connection to wildlife, water resources, and lands that are quietly being converted to shopping centers and recreational complexes, taking away the wildness. This is often at the expense of soils, vegetation, and water pathways that took centuries to form. The worst part of it in those places is that many of the people there are so uninformed and uninvolved that they have no idea what they are losing. But here, we know how spectacular yet fragile this place is. Kitsap has a natural inheritance that is unimaginable in most parts of this country. I have also met so many wise and generous people here who literally spend their lives working for the health and wildness of our parks. What a resource we have in them. Look at Bainbridge Island. Their commitment to wild places is one reason why it is one of the most desired places to live along the West Coast. They also welcome community input and involvement with hundreds of local citizens who regularly and passionately volunteer in their natural spaces. We may not have their resources here on the kind of main Kitsap County, but we have more parks and so many passionate people who have worked for the health of wild spaces. Please keep those people involved and authentically engaged. They know these places by heart.
Our parks stand as the only places where we, the people, still have a collective voice to speak on behalf of the wildlife, native vegetation, flowing waters, and wildness that are disappearing all over the world at an alarming rate. Let's try going in a different direction and become known as the county that took the environmental high road when it comes to the PROS plan. Look for places to keep it as wild as possible. And to quote Dr. Seuss's Lorax, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. Thank you.
Lisa, we're back to you.
Excellent, great. Sharon, that was great, thank you. For the record, my name is Lisa Hurt, and I lived in Kitsap County for 60 years. 8 years ago, I started actively joining groups and getting involved in the local politics with the hope of helping to keep Kitsap the treasure that it is, a beautiful, lush oasis of nature. We are a unique area surrounded by water and mountains and still have some forests and wild animals, which are quickly disappearing. I've come to realize that it seems this whole planning process is systematically corrupt and favors development above all else. There seems to be a pattern with the process. Whether it's a large development or a large plan, someone has an idea. An expensive plan is made by a contracted firm, public meetings are held to get public input. But unfortunately, while there's a considerable amount of time and effort made by the public reading and understanding these plans so that they can make informed comments at these meetings, it turns out, though, that those comments that are made don't even have to be considered. Having those public meetings that, you know, the PROS plan ad, is just a box to be checked off for the process to get the draft plan passed or to get the grants funded. A perfect example of this is the 25 PROS plan. I mean, the majority of the comments were in favor of conservation, wildlife, and quiet walking trails, not bike parks. The process, codes, and the laws seem to undermine all attempts by the public to make their wants of keeping intact rural spaces a reality. Our commissioners depend on informed information from our public servants. It seems many of these offices have been infiltrated and swayed by developers, John Rose in particular, backroom deals, quid pro quo, bait and switch. I've seen it all, and I'm literally disgusted at what's going on in this county. Development is out of control. So I ask you, please, stop. Think and listen. Listen to the birds. Go outside and take a walk. Hear the wind in the trees. Listen to your neighbors. This is what we, you, need to listen to, not the developers and their ideas. Take a good look at what's disappearing, because once it's gone, we can never replace it. Thank you for your time.
Carol Price.
Good evening. Good evening, commissioners. My name is Carol Price. I have lived north of Paulsbo for the last 30 years. Yesterday evening, I sent the Planning Commission written comments on the 2025 PROS update. My email included two pages of comments on parks, trails, and safety concerns. But I'm going to talk about something else. Tonight I am focusing on the issue of our county parks being commodified, being used by business interests to sell housing in their developments. Examples include Arborwood, which borders North Kitsap Heritage Park, the town of Port Gamble, wholly owned by Rainier and Radiant, and perched at the top of Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park, plus the 400 acres bordering the east side of the park that John Rose and Rainier are asking Kitsap County to rezone for development. Clearly, these corporate interests are using county parks as amenities and selling points for their developments. Most of the housing is out of reach. Most of the housing that they build will be out of reach for the average working family here in Kitsap. Add to this ongoing clear-cutting, add to all of this the ongoing clear-cutting in Port Gamble Forest by Rainier. Right now, all trails south of Logging Road 1800 are affected by intermittent closures due to these activities. My point here is that these parks belong to Kitsap County and to county residents. The interests and concerns of local citizens are not being honored, not by business entities, nor by our own local county government. Indeed, after reading the 2025 PROS update, I fear that the County Parks Department is far too cozy with the developers and corporations. Their goal seems to be building amenities for active recreation. That will come with further degradation of nature and parks. Please do not support the draft PROS update. Insist that parks and the county craft a comprehensive parks plan that prioritizes nature and wildlife. Thank you for your time.
Robin Salthaus.
Thank you. My name is Robin Salthaus. I live in Kingston, Washington. The current PROS plan draft does not build on the goals and strategies for heritage parks found in the 2018 PROS plan. Instead, the current draft turns the Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park into a regional park, which reduces and eliminates many of the protections, conservation, and rural attributes so many Kitsap residents highly value, as reported in the recent Kitsap County Rural and Resource Lands Community Survey. I ask that the Planning Commission insist the PROS plan maintain Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park as a heritage park. It's also time to prioritize trails within the Port Gamble Forest as pedestrian-only trails in the capital improvement plan for conservation and safety purposes. The northwest area of the Port Gamble Forest is becoming highly developed with the mountain bike ride park, parking lot, along with a fundraising effort to build a second beginner jump trail, which further challenges the goal to conserve and protect natural areas. Funding from sources like the Forest and Bay Initiative were secured to purchase land for conservation and not make the park into a high-impact active recreation center. Currently, Tessa's Trail is the lone pedestrian-only trail in the forest. And after reading yet again the PROS draft today, regional parks do not, the definition in the new classification system does not mention conservation or protection of natural areas. Only natural park classifications do. The future PROS plan must provide specific goals, strategies, and capital improvement plans that conserve and protect forest habitat and wildlife in our nature-based heritage parks. These goals should closely align and support the 2024 Comprehensive Plan PROS element, especially Goal 5, environmental compatibility. Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park status must remain as a heritage park and not change to a regional park. Residents and visitors to our heritage parks need equitable access to passive, low-impact recreation trails to support a sustainable future for the forest and for the health of those who are unable to participate in active recreation. Thank you.
I have a Zoom user listed as the next.
Hello. This is, sorry for the name. This should be April Ryan. I live in Kingston, Washington. First, thank you for the park's efforts to engage the public about what they want in their parks and to create a solid PROS plan. I have participated in the park's public meetings and surveys to gather my input, and I commend the park department for providing these opportunities. The problem is that all this public input isn't well reflected in the actual plan, except as appendices. For example, since a strong majority of park users prefers natural trails, this should be identified as a priority. Instead, this preference is minimized and is not listed as a priority in capital improvements. There appears to be a gap between the public input and the author of the plan, which seems to be based on a template rather than the gathered information. Had the plan been released as an early 30% draft, this gap could have been identified and sent back for editing to be more accurate and representative, as is usually done in draft review processes. Instead, the public and county have received a final draft for review with little opportunity to make meaningful changes. Furthermore, this plan does not appear to be an update of the previous plan. The Parks Department decided to take a different approach and develop a plan that reflected their departmental needs. Because this document is so long and vaguely written, it was hard to understand that it has taken a substantial deviation and could be implemented in ways that are counter to what the public wants. Lastly, the plan looks good, has pretty pictures. However, please respect the draft, review, edit process and make the necessary corrections as requested. This plan is for the public's parks, not just the department's convenience. I look forward to reviewing a revised draft at 60% completion before a final draft is submitted. Thank you. April Ryan.
Annie Stevens.
Thank you. Annie Stevens, Hansville, North Kitsap County. I would like to applaud your very close attention to the PROS plan, which stands to benefit Kitsap County residents, young residents and old residents. I'm speaking today to advocate for the plan to optimize equitable nature and green space access for the children in places where they live, play, and learn. I'm a pediatrician who served at Seattle Children's Hospital for 27 years. I also volunteered for the Sierra Club Intercity Outings, now called Inspiring Connections Outdoors Group. The ICO group volunteers take kids out on camping, hiking, and snowshoeing trips. Kids who live in urban environments, this is pretty common in Seattle, with fewer parks and who have financial and transportation limitations that prevent access to wilderness areas that are outside of the city limits. So I know firsthand how immersion in nature transforms the lives of these young people. I was on a trip with a 12-year-old girl who had never seen snow before. An adolescent, you would swear, was a delinquent and was just awed by the expansive landscapes on a hike. So I've seen the minds of kids changed by nature. I also know through published data that exposure to nature and green spaces, sometimes called green exercise, is critical to the development of a healthy child, physical development, and mental development. Multiple really well-conducted studies have demonstrated benefits to green exercise, which includes weight control, lower depression, better grades, especially science knowledge, you can imagine, better behavior, and overall overcoming some of the challenges of kids growing up in poverty. In this era of epidemic childhood stress and anxiety that everybody's heard about, protecting as much land as possible to maintain green space and wildlands is really critical. Paving over any wildlands for any reason, including for recreation, would directly contradict that goal. We have extensive green spaces in Kitsap County, and I really want to thank you for acting to preserve our green spaces for the health of the children of Kitsap. Please preserve as much of it as you can. I'm going to submit my comments in written form with references, and I'd be happy to discuss the data in further depth if anyone's interested. Thank you.
Betty Parsons.
Thank you. I'm Beverly Parsons from Hansville in North Kitsap. My comments expand on something I mentioned earlier, that the draft PROS plan presented here is at about a 60% completion stage if we were to compare it to the planning process used in the year of the rural planning. Parks didn't provide the public with opportunities at a 30% and 60% completion stage, as Year of the Rural has done, but skipped over those stages for public engagement to what is now being moved forward as a draft that is ready for final draft review. I would contend it is not ready. Simply doing surveys is not the same as this type of review that I'm talking about. I commented earlier about things such as the extraneous information and incomplete analysis of public survey and other data. That would not be unusual in a 60% complete document, but I realized I was actually distracted by those conditions and failed to mention two issues that are even more important. Those are, first of all, the lack of priority setting within the plan, and secondly, the lack of methods of engagement of multiple user groups and interested parties in modifying and carrying out priorities over the 6 years covered by the plan. Current priorities need to be clearly specified, and the processes to adjust and carry out the priorities over time need to be explained in the final version of the PROS plan. We are living in a complex situation with increasing economic constraints, environmental changes, population increases, and changes in how people live. The ongoing engagement of park users and interested parties is crucial as priorities are modified and carried out in the 6 years covered by the PROS plan. In complex and changing situations, priorities need to be regularly reviewed and plans for them carried out need to be adjusted. The method of engagement also changes. For example, well-facilitated meetings of multi-user group and interested parties are needed to collectively agree on actions. Budgeting for such meetings can save substantial time and money in the long run. I appreciate that the goals in the draft PROS plan have added attention to a more sustainable park system, natural resource management, and sustainable design. However, these words have little meaning without a well-articulated process for setting, amending, and carrying out priorities appropriate for our complex time. It is different than the typical linear approach of the past. Thank you.
Beth Nichols.
Hello, commissioners. Thank you for giving me a chance to speak. I'm Beth Nichols. I've lived in Indianola for 40 years. Kitsap parks are precious to the residents who live here. This was clear in the county's public survey. Kitsap citizens strongly value Kitsap's natural environment, and they want our parks to protect valuable environmental resources where they still remain. Our heritage parks, North Kitsap, Port Gamble Forest, and Newberry Heritage Park, are rich environments that give us an opportunity to protect areas that are unique in their vibrant ecosystems. I'm speaking specifically to these special parks. Our parks are not only for human activity, but as the county develops, heritage parks are the largest areas of habitat for wildlife, becoming rare reserves for biodiversity. We want the county to support natural recreation, such as simple walking trails through natural terrain that allow habitat for creatures and natural ecosystems to thrive. Our large heritage parks are especially valuable for providing habitat while allowing natural recreation. The updated plan appears to push for more active, developed recreation that is not in balance with preserving habitat, with a focus on development and standardization rather than respecting areas that are prime habitat and rich ecosystems. A different approach is needed in heritage parks. To plan wisely for upholding the protection of environmental resources, there needs to be a process of assessment of natural resources and landscape classification. It is crucial to determine what sensitive resources are in the park landscapes before planning any development to them. The current plan being considered does not meet this goal and could potentially cause harm to important and unique natural resources because of the lack of knowledge from initial assessments. The current PROS plan appears to turn away from public input, away from valuing of habitat and natural recreation, and proceeds blindly with poor planning without environmental assessment. Changes in this plan from the 2018 plan are not of benefit to the unique richness of the parks that we hold together as a county and for the future. The Parks Department in this document are not upholding what the citizens wholeheartedly support. This is especially damaging to the valuable heritage parks that give us a chance to protect natural resources while citizens can enjoy their natural beauty. More work needs to happen on the PROS plan to bring it into better balance of environmental protection of valuable natural resources and more honoring of citizen input and true participation in planning. Thank you very much.
Martha Burke.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Martha Burke. I live in Suquamish, and I would like to comment about preserving the heritage parks. More than 75% of all park and open space acreage in Kitsap is located within the six heritage parks, the largest being Port Gamble. These parks in the 2018 PROS plan were described as the foundation of the Kitsap County Park System. Why? Because these lands remain primarily undeveloped natural areas with environmentally sensitive areas preserved or enhanced. The physical characteristics of these lands lend themselves to varied passive and conservation uses. These large tracts of forest land contain ecologically important streams, wetlands, and forest habitats, more than 2 miles of shorelines and tidelines. When surveyed, 89% of respondents said that nature activities were their primary reason for visiting parks. People love these parks and identify with them. Port Gamble is especially important since it also provides critical habitat for unique plants such as orchids that aren't found elsewhere, as well as habitat for wildlife, including bears, bobcats, and other species. Unlike other parks, it is large enough that areas can be protected with minimal human disturbance. It is important to keep this designation as a heritage park and the protection it provides. I urge the Commission to maintain the category of Heritage Park, especially for Port Gamble. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
I see no other hands raised for the Zoom meeting. So we should next move into local. Do we have anybody that signed up? Please come forward.
Hello, I'm David Onstead. I live in Port Orchard. I've also been a steward of the parks, several parks in the county for 3 years until January when things went bad and we don't really have much of a stewardship program anymore. I have major concerns about the PROS plan in general and the plan's lack of protections for the heritage parks. One of my conclusions is that the department needs to find ways to improve the planning process for heritage parks. We all agree the PROS plan lacks precise guidelines. That's about the only thing we can all agree on. The PROS plan consists of many bits of information about public comments and basic facts, but it's too vague, superficial, and unrealistic to be a plan. An example of the lack of realism is the section on stewardship. When I read it as a steward, I was thinking, wow, the future looks bright. But then I realized I was just being abandoned by the Parks Department in January and February as a steward, as many other stewards did, and so I thought this is not really realistic. I would also say the capital improvement plan is generally not realistic given the funding available. We may hope for the best in the future, but it's another example for me of the unrealism or the lack of realism. With regard to heritage parks, major projects such as the North Sound to Olympic transportation route are now no longer being considered in the Parks Department planning, even though they likely will be bulldozed right through the two heritage parks, the Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park and the North Kitsap Heritage Park. The county seems to believe, or at least wants the public to believe, that it can select capital projects without simultaneously accounting for the NSTO. Also, in its standardized responses to the public in the matrix, the county states that the details will be in management plans for each park, which, you know, that sounds like a great idea. For example, the management framework for Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park was declared a fantastic achievement in December 2022 and has been guiding the department since, including convincing the Kitsap Public Facilities District to provide a huge amount of money for the facilities in Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park. But the framework has never been approved legally by the commissioners. The county wants it both ways. No details now in the PROS plan, and no approval of details in the park-specific plans. And so it leaves those that are wanting to change things in a difficult situation. I urge the Planning Commission, which knows how to plan, to require more careful planning by the Parks Department. The natural areas of the heritage parks must be protected. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Glenda Jenkins, and I live in Kingston. Would everyone in this room who has ever walked through the North Kitsap Heritage Parks please raise their hands? Lucky you! You've been able to experience nature firsthand. You're very likely seen wildlife and the natural wonders that very possibly inspire you. That's the power of heritage parks. They bring us together, heal our spirits, safeguard our air and water, stabilize our climate, and provide habitats for wildlife. They're sanctuaries of peace, solace, serenity, and a unique connection to nature and wildlife. Commissioners, I hope you'll join us, your constituents, your grassroots supporters, in being informed by leading voices in the nature sciences to act for Kitsap County Heritage Parks and execute a people's vision. It puts more emphasis on preserving Kitsap's natural habitat by, one, preserving habitats with pedestrian-only trails throughout heritage parks, two, supporting and enhancing the volunteer park stewardship program, three, maintaining Port Gamble Heritage Forest status as a heritage park, don't convert it to a regional park, four, doing a better job of involving the community in decision-making and involve park stewards in planning, five, enhancing public participation through more informational meetings, Q&A sessions, and extended comment periods. Nearly 1,500 people responded that their most used recreation facilities were, quote, nature trails, open space, natural habitats, according to the draft PROS plan, page 58. The Kitsap County Rural and Resource Lands Community Survey stated that 87% of respondents believe maintaining Kitsap County's rural look and feel is important. 82% support policies to protect rural open spaces, agricultural land, and scenic areas. With respect, we are holding you accountable to meet this moment with new energy, new strategy, and renewed dedication to the vision of the people and communities who make up your constituency and whose trust you need to earn. We hold your decision to continue to support the values of your constituency in high regard, so that together we can make a lasting difference in the lives of Kitsap's current and future walkers. Walking in nature is a cherished pastime for many of us. The ability to wander amidst towering trees, feel the warmth of sunlight on our skin, and breathe the invigorating scent of the natural world can be both calming and rejuvenating. Keep Kitsap green, because people need heritage parks, and so does wildlife.
Hello, my name is Lynn Shorn. I'm also from North Kitsap, believe it or not. I would just like to put a shout out to the Parks Department for all of their reach out to our community, all of their community engagement, all of their work. There are very few parks employees at this time. Part of the reason that the stewardship volunteer groups have not been as present as in the past is because there's nobody to lead. There's nobody to help out. I was around and helped purchase Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park with many, many campaign donors and many, 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 many people from Seattle, from Kitsap County that believed in purchasing not a natural space, but a timber farm at Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park, as well as North Kitsap Heritage Park, which are timber farms. And we're trying as hard as we can with Parks' help to create a more natural environment. As a physical therapist, however, natural environments need to accommodate my people that aren't able to walk. I just want to tell a short story of a man who had a son, and he had an adaptive bicycle to engage in being able to use Port Gamble Forest Heritage Park with his son. So wheelchairs are necessary to be in our parks as well, as walkers, as well as bikers. Can't we have parks for all users? Environmentalists, walkers, bike riders, horseback riders. Isn't that what parks are about? I'm sorry for my angst about, I am working really hard to purchase the trees from the timber company with our forest fund, which is a nonprofit. So I'm an environmentalist, but I'm also a person that wants to be outside and appreciates that everyone should be able to participate in our parks in a public way. Thank you.
Before I start my comments, Chairman Bean, could you clarify what the public comment period is? How long are you taking written comments?
I think.
Nobody knows?
Through today, the public comment period ends today, May 20th.
Given what we've heard today, I would suggest the board consider extending that so we can public can have an opportunity to reply. So I'll go ahead and make my comment. Okay. My name is Joe Lubisher. I live in Indianola. And by way of introduction, I started working at the North Kitsap Heritage Park 8-9 years ago or so. And what I wanted to comment on today really had to do with the overgenerality and lack of specifics. You know, a PROS plan should really be telling us where we're going to go and how we're going to do it, and doesn't do that. And the fact that I've done the stewardship work in the park for a while, certainly not as long as some. I think Lynn's been at it for 20 years or longer. And so I want to just give you, rather than my prepared comments, I just want to share some of my experience, give you a reality check on what's going on. Totally support the heritage parks. They're, you know, fantastic. It's really an incredible thing in this county that you just don't find very many other places. That vision started going decades ago. And despite what the PROS plan says about, we've got a new vision. You know, we've had a vision all along, and we want to keep that going. So there was, let me tell you a couple of stories here. One is that back in November 2023, when this process was starting going, there was a meeting in Kingston, and I said, when are we going to talk about policy? And the parks consultant said, we're not. And that turned out to be true. So this PROS plan has had no opportunity for public comment on policy at all. So you're put into a difficult position. You know, I'll apologize to you for that. But you're being asked to do much more than just review a plan. You're being asked to respond to, being asked to include a policy discussion that should have already occurred. The other thing is, I was chair of our stewardship group for about 4 years. We were doing projects at least twice a month. As a result of what's happened over the last few years, that's gone way down. We've had stewards quit out of frustration, pull back on what they're doing. And remember, these, you know, the stewards are bringing their own tools. They're providing their ideas. They're laying out what needs to be done. And it was all happening on a pretty, oftentimes, ad hoc basis. When things need to be done, they got done. The last meeting I went to that had a parks employee, they told us, we don't want you doing anything in the park unless we know about it and you're supervised. And this is, you know, so I've been watching the marginalization of stewardship groups for about 4 years now. It started out with, we're not going to refund any expenses. And they pulled the budget. And it just kept going that way. And it's a terrible loss because it takes a while to build stewardship groups, to build the camaraderie, get people to know each other, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses, and after a while it just works naturally. It's been an incredible thing, and you saw it at Newberry Hill, and it's been good at Port Gamble, it's been at North Kitsap, and we still have to build groups for Eglon and Coulter Creek.
Chair, we have reached the time.
Can you finish up?
So the reality is the stewardship groups are being killed out. And I think that one way you could look at this is whether the Parks Department wants total control or whether the Parks Department wants public engagement. And that has been done successfully in places like Teton National Park, Teton National Forest. They have evidently an exceptional program there. And there's no reason we can't do that here. But this program kills off those stewardship groups. And if you extend your public comment period, I'll put my comments I had intended to make tonight in there. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Are there any further public comments? Alex, are you here?
We did have a Rick Feeney who signed up in the back of the room.
Okay. Anybody else? Alex, can we extend comments till Monday to allow people to finish written comments? Can staff accommodate that?
Yeah, certainly. That doesn't impact our schedule. That's just fine.
Okay, so.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we extend the public written public comment period to Monday, May, whatever the date is, the next Monday at 5 p.m.
Oh, it's.
Yeah, that.
That's so, a holiday.
Tuesday. So extend it till Tuesday, May 27th at 5 p.m.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to extend the period until May 27th at 5 p.m. Any further comments? Questions? All in favor? Questions? Yeah.
Alex, quick question maybe for you. I've heard a lot about labor being a big portion of this, and obviously we've talked about this previously. What is there as far as interagency working relationship with maybe Public Works or somebody else for either the labor or the capital projects specifically to address some of that, especially with the dwindling, obviously, of stewardship programs? Is there any interagency work?
Yeah, where we're challenged the most is on the maintenance and operations side for our developed parks and facilities. And just For the record, I think 100% of the comments today were about heritage parks. Those are 6 out of 74 parks that we manage. We also maintain like 18 soccer and athletic fields, tennis courts, playgrounds, picnic shelters, beaches, baseball diamonds. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of effort for a very small staff. In large part, the stewardship groups and our volunteer work parties and volunteer efforts are focused on trail maintenance and in the more natural areas of our parks, hence our heritage parks. And so we have more work there. Where we struggle is more on the maintenance side of other parks and facilities that really draws a lot of our efforts. Our department has 41 staff members recognized in both the PROS plan and in a different recent study. We're about 50% of what the department should be in terms of full-time staff members based on current levels of park development. We are actually okay a bit on the capital improvement side. We have dedicated funding for capital projects to replace synthetic turf in some of our soccer fields, to fix up and replace playgrounds, to do repairs to our community buildings and our beaches and public venues. Where we lack and where we struggle is the maintenance of those facilities after they're constructed. There are no grants for maintenance and operations. There are struggles for creating partnerships and getting volunteers to assist with those type of things. There's also a level of liability and skill expertise that goes into that too, which makes it a challenge to, you know, rely on volunteerism for some of the things we do. So I don't know if that was kind of getting at what you were talking about. I mean, in short, we don't have enough people throughout the department, at all levels.
Has the component of interagency relationship working together with maybe another department that is staffed, has that been explored, or is that not even possible? I'm not sure.
So in terms of use of like public work staff, it's not possible. Those staffing members pull from different buckets of money. Those funds, like funds for road maintenance, those are dedicated funds, can only be used on roads. So if we were to utilize public work staff to assist us with doing a project or repairs, we have to pay them to do that work. We're not able to kind of cross-departmentally assist each other if the funding streams cross. And that is just by law, we're only allowed to put money in certain places. So we do as a county, I mean, we are, you know, one big organization. We do look for areas in which we can create efficiencies. That is how the county's new Capital Facilities Division was created. It lives in public works, but it services capital facility project oversight for all of the departments, which is a great benefit and efficient way for the county to function. But when it gets down to a lot of the ground level tasks that need to be performed on a daily basis, it's a little bit more challenging. Okay.
So the question on the floor is,
I'm going to call the question on whether we extend the comment period to next Tuesday.
Questions? All in favor of extending the comment period? Tuesday, 5:00.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions or presenters.
Alex's question. It's a question, partially a guess question and a comment together for you is, on May 6th, you had mentioned that you had a market study done or a study of your current FTE needs, and you said that it was roughly 19 FTE full-time employees as a deficit for the Parks Department. And on page 54 here on your draft PROS plan, it talks about your volunteer and stewardship programs, and it says that collectively annually our parks are receiving roughly 45,000 hours of volunteer time between volunteers, stewards, And what that really works out to is actually 21 FTE. I'm rounding down. And so I think that while, yes, it's just a comment, but I think that that really speaks into the importance of maintaining the cooperation and relationship with the steward programs. And so I think that that's a resounding theme here. And I would just be curious kind of what can we do to bolster and show the appreciation and cooperation with those groups going forward. And I do understand also that a lot of those heavily are within the heritage parks. And like you said, that's only six of the parks.
Correct.
But I do think that that 21 FTE worth of man hours is definitely notable and something to acknowledge and hopefully preserve going forward.
No, fully agreed. The 45,000 hours of volunteerism that happens in the department has grown significantly over the last 3 years. And so it is an impressive achievement for that amount of community involvement to take place in a park system. I've not worked anywhere in four different states that I came from before being here where there is a volunteer or as much community engagement as is present here. Also note that the 19 FTEs are on top of everything that we currently have. And those, you know, it's not a apples to apples comparison, perform different work, assist in different ways, level of productivity comes out in different facets. So, not perfect, but I understand the point. Thanks.
Any further comments or questions? Public? Okay. Hearing none, we'll close this portion of the public hearing.
We actually have a question from David Blee, Commissioner Blee.
Okay. David?
Yeah, for me, it was, I didn't know if this was the appropriate time, but I just, it was more of a comment on just, thank you, for, everybody, for all the engagement, whether online or in person today, to kind of educate us and to take part in the process. I just want to acknowledge them, so thank you.
No further questions, comments, and we'll close the public hearing on parks.
We'll still need to leave it open until
public
Tuesday.
Comments until Tuesday. Okay. That brings us to the next item on the agenda, which is work-study planning for the annual commissioners' meeting. What happens is we will have a meeting with the commissioners to get to know the commissioners. They get to know us. At that point, they're going to ask us for what are our concerns or what things we want to bring up. The purpose of this meeting is to come up with a series of questions that we can decide what we want to do. and we have our secretary here.
So you want me to kick this off?
Sure. Can we get you closer to the mic so they can hear?
Forgot about the mic. All right, so just stepping back, I'll just say that it's really important for the Planning Commission to be engaged in dialogue about what's important for the board and what's important for DCD, as well as what's important for the public. And so with the joint meeting, historically, it's not been agenda-driven. If you were at last year's meeting, you would recall that there was a bit of an awkward silence for the first half minute or so where the chair kind of looked around, the board chair looked around and said, well, what are we here to talk about? And that got things flowing. But we thought, you know, it's best to be a little more organized this time around. And so the goal of tonight's mini session here is to come up with four items that we can transmit to the board for the June 16th, I believe 2 p.m. Joint meeting. Now, I think everybody understands that the board gets to choose the final agenda, so it's possible that none of those four could end up on the final agenda. But I feel good that at least some of those will. The board has things that they're going to want to talk about. And also, some of these things may not be limited to planning, right? It could be human services and health or housing needs. Yeah. So the challenge before you tonight is to take the two each items, and then let's see if we can winnow it down to four. I'll take notes to help, but it's really up to you how you want to winnow it down to four. You could start by going round table for everybody's first priority that they might have, and then coming back around for their second priority. But there's a number of ways where you could choose to kind of decide which four are going to pop to the top. And so I'm happy to take notes, and any ideas on how to do this is entertained. And some of these might be parking lot ideas, and some of these might actually just be presentations that the right person in the right department needs to come back to the Planning Commission and give.
That would be something like, what are we doing for permit improvement?
Exactly.
What are we doing for staff improvement in getting people? Those can be presentations that don't necessarily lead themselves to discussions with the commissioners.
Correct. And we're actually planning on having a presentation to you on where are we with permitting under the new permitting legislation that was approved some time ago, but which jurisdictions are struggling to enact. And we're no exception, but we're getting there. So we'll talk more about that, certainly.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to respond. So point of order, I did like the idea of us just going, you know, down the line just to start off, just to get us warmed up.
You're first.
Okay. Is everyone ready? Okay. So let's see. I guess if you were to question first and then I'll respond. If you were to frame the question that was asked to the commission, would you just phrase it as what are your like general priorities or like thematic priorities, or could you just specify that question that we're answering?
So we didn't get into sort of thematic priorities, but more like what do you feel are the top agenda items that we would want to the Planning Commission would want to discuss with the Board of County Commissioners. And so that could cross any number of boundaries.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. So in response to that question, I have a general theme. I tend to like working off of themes. And again, just thank you for the opportunity to weigh in. Fun fact, after grad school, I applied for a PhD in urban planning. And so I feel like this is my next opportunity to share out my application ideas. So thinking general theme is around, for me, enhancing quality of life in Kitsap County. And so in that way, one of the main kind of priorities that I would bring to the table is, and as it's also stated in our comprehensive plan, enhancing land use and transportation patterns. So in that way, how can we think about reducing reliance on single occupancy vehicles, addressing needs of transit dependent users, and then in that, how can we better plan for and incorporate or model transportation related determinants of health? So that's all just to say land use and transportation patterns as a priority. I do have one other, but I will pass it down the line.
Land use and transportation. So better land use and transportation planning to decrease reliance on automobiles.
Right, single occupancy.
Okay.
And then to address those gaps most experienced by transit-dependent users.
Okay. And increase transit options. I apologize if you can't read my writing or if it's too small. I can bring it. Is that too small to read? Oh, you guys got better eyes than I do. Okay.
A lot of my focus is really on the Kingston area and the accessibility to the waterfront for the public and the traffic and the ferry inroads and the transportation impact on the Kingston area.
Okay. So waterfront access? And could you help me with the latter part of that?
The changing of the highway 104 and the port through the town of Kingston is going to be a major impact on that town, in addition to the improved transportation that they're putting into as a transportation hub.
Okay. So I have waterfront transportation access to the ferry or the hub. Good? Okay.
Yeah, my focus is a little different, Scott. It seems to me that the Planning Commission, again, job in part is to present some recommendations and information to the commissioners. And what we've done, like the administrative changes that we just put together, we've got Planning Commission's input. You know, here's two sentences and what the Planning Commission thought about that. Which is okay, because the commissioners have plenty to read and work on. But in years past, we, as a commission, have focused more on kind of a more substantive report and often had minority reports, you know, kind of, hey, you know, not quite agreeing with this. Here's some another side of this for you to think of as commissioners. And so the question is, what product can we provide the commissioners as a planning commission that might help them and ease their effort in making decisions that come before us?
So what I wrote, is there a better PC product to the board to aid in decision making? Yeah? Okay.
Oh, you're going to love me. Over the years.
I already do, Alan.
Over the years, we have seen most of the changes that are being legislative delivered. We're reacting to and working with legislation. Comes to mind specifically in all the critical areas things. The question always is, what's wrong with what we have now? We don't have a monitoring program. We don't have a procedure to say what's not working, what is working, what needs changing. But I think we need to look at, and this is why you're going to love me, we need more people, is how do we establish a monitoring program to figure out what we're doing is effective? And what really needs changing.
Okay.
I'm getting tired of adding another 50 feet to every time we go into controlled critical areas ordinances.
Okay, so monitoring for effectiveness of current regulations.
Okay. Now, why do we need the change?
Point of clarification. Is it monitoring how things are working, or is it the evaluation of, from like a quality improvement?
You've got to go out and look first before you can evaluate.
Mm-hmm, I see.
And they don't look.
Okay. And so there is a follow-on component to that. Yeah, certainly. Okay.
Okay, my first topic would be lack of senior and 55 plus housing within Kitsap County, and more specifically, independent living options. There is virtually no multifamily independent living 55 plus or senior housing in Kitsap County. That's one of the largest housing deficits nationally, and our state is not exempt from that. By 2030, there will be more folks in Kitsap County that are over 65 than there will be under 18, and 32% of Kitsap County is over 55, so a third of our population here. And so we have a huge gap there to support that population. And
they're not making more dirt, so we might have to go vertical. So that's my
senior and 55 plus housing and independent housing.
Independent housing for seniors or 55 plus. That wording, 55 and senior, sometimes they virtually mean the same thing. The 55 plus usually comes with like different covenants, things like that, that are like deeded in.
Okay.
And the independent housing piece, the independent piece is not memory care, not hospice, right. Not assisted living. We actually have a significant amount. We have over 2,000 units within Kitsap County, which is pretty great per capita. Like in, as far as overall ratio, it's truly independent living options.
Okay. Thank you.
My two, one is a little bit shorter, so I'll start with that one. The other one's maybe a little bit deeper pieces. Maybe more of a presentation from the commissioners or for community development, but also a question of why the county utilizes two different platforms to go through the permitting process. You do intake through Camino, and then you transition to SmartGov.
Okay.
Questions about or so, explanation about why that necessarily is versus utilizing maybe just SmartGov to go through everything or Camino to go through everything.
Okay, so an efficiency question about permit processing.
Well, you're going to talk, give us a brief on how you're doing on permitting anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe add that, maybe just add that piece in there.
Yeah,
that would be nice.
I think I, we would, yeah, absolutely.
Comments? Aaron?
I think my big one is affordable housing. And I will agree with the previous commissioner about the statistics nationally for 65 versus 18-year-olds. That is the rest of our lives going to be true. I sit in the stance of aging in place as an architect. Just came back from giving two national conference presentations on the subject matter, both at the house level and at the community level. Homelessness in the 65 plus category is the quickest rising demographic. And so there seems to be a real gap between understanding what, you know, grant subsidized housing, Section 8, HUD, you know, versus there seems to be nothing in between that and market rate. There's not a county in the United States where in that county, the minimum wage, if you work 40 hours a week, that you can afford a two-bedroom apartment. Not a single county in the U.S. So that's a broken system. You heard people talk about what can we do to be visionary and be different and be leading the way. I think that figuring out the missing middle for housing, and yes, we've made strides in zoning and going the recognition as just stated about needing to go vertical. Because we're not making more dirt. But with that comes the issue, yes, there's elevators, but with that comes the issue of, you know, accessibility. I personally believe that the percentage of apartment buildings that are required as an architect, I've designed a 150-unit apartment building and only whatever it is, 2% have to be ADA compliant. But we're about to have 20-30% of people over 65 with a changing in mobilities in their future. First, that's your parents. You're dealing with it right now, and then it's about to be you. So you might as well plan your own future for success. So for me, it's about affordability and accessibility as a housing focus.
Realizing that that's really not your DCD issue.
No, but it's a planning
commitment. Has to plan for it.
Yeah, it's a planning issue that will evolve into policies, and those policies will evolve into code.
Well, but I can argue, and I'll excuse, you know, needing to allude to a developer's presentation, but I have seen the presentation that says that $136,000 of every front doorknob is the cost of doing business and the joy and the pleasure of working with Kitsap County. So I have to state it that the efficiencies and the maybe governmental oversight and overreach and the expense associated with that is a part of housing affordability.
Well, they did a study 5 years ago. What are the results of that study? How are we doing on what we already said?
Are you talking about the housing study?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I responded to your email that Doug Washburn is probably the best person to address that. So I don't have the answer to that.
No, we did an housing affordability study 5 years ago, and it's gone on the shelf. I don't think anybody's done anything, or they don't track. What do we do with the stuff we've already done? And that goes all into this housing affordability.
Yeah.
Well, right now, Kitsap County, we have just over 6,000 units short on our housing action plan as it sits, like, through 2025, beginning of 2025, and we're 1,100 affordable units short, Kitsap County specifically. And affordable is classified as 80% AMI, average median income, short.
I'll take you out to just north of Safeway in Bremerton to show you what the new duplexes they're developing are. They're not affordable.
Yeah, no, sure. And please don't get me wrong, 80% AMI is, it looks great on paper, but that, as far as like the individual that's living in that home and having to come up with that very much feels market rate. A lot of rents actually are at 80% AMI, which would be considered a market rate product. However, for like underwriting criteria, classifications within municipalities, 80% AMI would be considered affordable. So you see a lot of market rate projects that maybe developers can't pencil, they'll take 20% of their units, put them at 80% AMI, now they get more preferred lending, they can build out their project, but that rent's only $150 less than the unit next door. So truly, we don't have deep affordability and deep affordable housing here where it's, you know, in a tiered system, 30, 40, 50, 70, 80%, and then 100% AMI is like some of the newer builds that we're seeing, you know what I mean? Here, Silverdale, things like that, those are 100% AMI, some even 120, but they're considered luxury apartment homes, things like that. We don't have deep affordability in Kitsap County.
So, Scott, in the interest of, you know, running through each person, and I'd like to hear what David had to say, but can you tell me what you're writing down for my commentary?
Yeah, so what I wrote is affordable housing and homelessness issues and accessibility, based on what you said.
Yeah, that's fair. Thank you.
And then if you're okay with the amendment to what you said, the presentation from D.C., maybe we can talk about costs and fees that go into a permit based on a 500 square foot house. Okay.
David, do you have some comments?
Yeah, appreciated with all you had to say. And kind of just to piggyback off of what Aaron was just saying a little bit, but in a different way, I guess. I've just always had a strong affinity for old houses and old buildings. I think they create the fabric of a community, and it's not just the house, it may be the yard and the trees that surround it. I feel like, and many, you know, I cringe when I see, you know, perfectly good old homes just crunched and thrown away, all of that old growth wood, all of that built-in strength of a great building. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be creating new buildings, but I would love to see some type of incentive to preserve what I consider affordable housing and starter homes for people. And also to what Aaron said, like, my parents still live in Central Texas, and the reason they've been able to stay in their house for 54 years is maybe part of how they did genetically. They have lived a good, healthy lifestyle, but they also live in a one-story home. And I,
You know, I see so many single-story older homes torn down and everything going vertical, which is great because we're not building more soil. That's right. But I just want to, I would love to work with the development community and DCD to see if, I don't know, if you get maybe an additional unit or something, if you preserve a home. But I feel like we're really losing affordable houses, houses that you can age in place. We're losing that surrounding, those trees, those gardens, that those beautiful areas around those houses. And yeah, and then I was once at a talk, and I don't know if it's completely true all the time, but the greenest house is the one that's already built. So I think there's a lot of greenwashing out there. And I'd like to see a lot of jobs created locally in putting on new roofs, re-insulating, you know, gutting some houses, but building them out, but preserving that house. So, and then secondly, just strengthening our LID program. So just for low income. I don't know, when we go and we create new subdivisions and stuff, I know it's very difficult, and I'm not an architect or a developer, but there's gotta be a better way than going in and just clearing the whole area. I wish there was a way to preserve some pockets, at least within that area, where we don't destroy it as much, where the water can infiltrate in. So, but primarily, it's how do we incentivize preserving older homes?
And so the better LID use during development, was that your second subject that you wanted to mention? Or is it tied to
I think because that one's a lot more difficult, I think more nuanced. Not that the first one isn't, but so I like, I guess part of the reason we're doing this is to do things we can actually achieve. So.
Right. I guess my question is, am I writing down LID as your second item that you wanted to talk about?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I think we've got, and I will do that. I'll probably do that on the next page. So we're at a point where, do you want to,
are there any other subjects that might be of interest? One of them that leaps to mind is we never track regulation reduction. When we always do these changes, we keep adding regulations. And I'm under the opinion that every time you've added a regulation to something, you've increased the cost. But when we do these changes, how do we do this? The classic example is stormwater. Stormwater was written for urban areas. In the concept of water conservation, we applied urban area stormwater rules to the entire county. That's got to have increased the cost of anything in the rural.
No doubt.
So is there even a philosophy to look at reducing things to see if we can get some of these programs down to size?
Well, I can tell you that DCD is certainly committed to removing barriers to development and housing costs where it can. And sometimes we run up against the state and its unfunded mandates that you mentioned earlier. That is the challenge before us. We could certainly oppose some of these requirements, but then we have to face the reality that there could be a challenge, and then that local control is taken away from us if we don't prevail on that challenge.
PSRC, here we come. Yeah.
Well, and watchdog outfits, and, you know, the tribes have vested interests.
But I'm just saying, we should have a philosophy at least looking at and tracking, are we adding or reducing requirements?
Yeah. I'll let you know that that's something that I'm looking at, talking to Rafe about, and their support for this, is taking a look at our use table and seeing whether all the conditional use permits are necessary as are currently prescribed.
You just see the books getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, I'd like to see it get smaller. So when we were looking at Senate Bill 5290, so that's that Senate bill that says you've got to do your Type 3 projects that require a hearing in 100 days. 170 days. The state in that legislation said that in RCW there's only a public hearing required for certain types of permits. And when we finally found that, because it wasn't easy to find where they were referencing, those project types were industrial, heavy industrial, that required public hearings. Didn't require public hearings for the commercial uses that we see on our table today. Now, I would argue that schools and hospitals, you know, uplands to marinas, those kinds of things should go through a public hearing process. Transitory shelters, maybe, because people get excited. There's a lot of work we could do to remove some of those barriers right out of the gate, and that would save a lot of time and money for both the applicant and staff, time for staff, money for the applicant. So that's something that we're going to be bringing to the Planning Commission in terms of looking
at I'm not sure.
Permissibility barriers.
I don't know if that's the likely thing to be talking to the commissioners about. That
sure.
may be a subject that you can bring to us.
It's part of that barriers examination.
One of the things you might want to add to your list is public participation. How do we increase public participation? Maybe it's we go out to them.
Okay. Is that your second item?
That's my second item.
Okay. So why don't I – did you want to go through this and pick out four and then compare it against the next list, or did you want me to write them all out and go
through? I would rather see the whole list.
Well, okay. Can I add something to that? Like my second thing is affordable housing, but I just have like a maybe something specific within that as to like my driver as to why. I don't know if you guys feel okay with that. That way it's not redundant on the second. Within affordable housing, a big pain point that a lot of folks, other taxpayers are not supportive of is that usually when you see affordable housing programs, the municipalities, there's things like tax credit, MFTEs, things like that, and usually what you're doing is you're just giving a break to the developer themselves to make the project pencil, to incentivize them to come develop, and usually that gets passed along to the next taxpayer or their neighbors or things of that nature. And so a little bit more creative initiatives or incentives to bring about development. There's plenty of developments across the state that are great case studies. For example, like in Seattle, there's a project that they did with Vulcan. They took an old historic building. Seattle Housing Authority partnered with them, went in. They were able to JV that project, go in, do a rehab, and turn that into affordable housing. It's a historic building. Just things like that. Or if there's surplus land that the county has, working with a developer on that, the county can donate the land. Just more creative options outside of MFTEs, tax credits, things like that, that just pass the buck along to the next taxpayer.
The tax shift, they call it.
Exactly right. And so just or incentives to work with existing buildings or existing structures on making them affordable, things like that. So that's my actual driver for my second.
And I think that's a great comment because everything I've learned at national conferences and stuff, that the only way to solve missing middle is public-private partnership. And actually, that's a great example to David's point, right? We got to not tear down a building. We got to re-envision it. But it does require getting out of your silo. It requires thinking creatively, and it requires not getting in the way. To Alan's point, right, we've heard presentations, those of us that have been here 8+ years have heard presentations about, you know, why was the code, all the code books stacked on each other 2 inches thick in 1985, and why is it 54 inches thick today? And then to Alan's point, has any of this been monitored, and what is it actually accomplishing? And is that documentable, and can it be seen as Delta proof positive or Delta negative? We never should have done it, so let's undo it. We don't have the data from the effort.
Okay, all good discussion. Now we're ready for round two, I think.
Okay. So my second priorities revolve around, again, quality of life, but thinking about what are tools that can be used in the everyday to support good decision making. So I'm thinking about, I believe there are current policies or recommendations and guidelines around assessing displacement risk from like an anti-displacement lens. So as we're thinking about increasing affordable housing, how do we also ensure that residents can, you know, stay in place and might, you know, not be at risk for displacement? So, and then that relates to my a similar tool. It can all be in one, just around, structural determinants of health. So just thinking about how our health is impacted by things outside, right, the doctor's office that are in our environment. So just assessing, you know, modeling for community conditions based on said, you know, or proposed action.
Can you help me understand the second part?
I think in short, we could just simplify it as model for assessing or actually, hold on, let me think about this. Some type of model or tool that can be used to understand structural determinants of health, so like community conditions, when we're making decisions, how might that have an impact on our health and well-being? And so a tool that can be implemented in support and alongside decisions.
So is that health in the built environment?
Yes, that would be health in the built environment. Okay. And it can include things like anti-displacement. It can include things like racial equity. It can include things like, yeah, various health outcomes, all that good stuff.
Okay.
And so, let's see, like, for example, the legislature will use a health impact assessment to assess various health impacts in like a proposed bill or, you know, budget, that kind of thing that can come at the request. So there are existing models that can be brought in or adapted, improved to fit the needs of, yeah, the department.
Okay. Thank you. Interested in seeing what that looks like, if you can forward us something like that.
Oh, I can send you many.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Mine was more on creating infrastructure to also attract younger families into the Kids App. As we're seeing the community age, we have fewer resources and families to support the aging communities. We want to make sure that it's a place that's attracting young families as well in our path forward.
So infrastructure to attract and retain younger families.
What we're doing tonight is pretty exciting for me. Again, Aaron and I have been on this commission a long time. And my read of what the Planning Commission has been, one, listen to staff's presentation, get a feel for it and give some feedback. Two, to provide a forum for public comment and public input into the things that are presented by staff. Three, vet what's presented by staff. So there's been some hard questions before it gets to the commissioners. It makes the commissioners' effort to finalize things easier.
Trust but verify.
Yeah. So the one thing that has, I think, been clear, and Aaron, maybe you have a different feel about it, is commissioners have said, we don't want you to be activists. We want you to do what staff presents to you, make decisions, give us recommendations. But don't go out and do the kinds of things that we're all talking about here in terms of coming up with concepts and policies. We don't have enough staff for that. We've got things on our agenda already. So the question I would have with commissioners is, given what is clearly an interest by this group in looking at everything from monitoring to affordable housing, everything else, is there any interest in an activist planning commission in terms of trying to say, let's take a look at some of these things, as Ellen said, beyond what is just mandated by the state or RCO or whatever entity it might be?
Okay. I like that. One of the things, if this makes it onto the final four, is that's really, that's got to be reflected in our docket, because we try to line out our docket according to best estimates on FTE, and sometimes that's a dart at the board. Other times, we're wildly off. You know, year of the rural, it's a bigger animal than we thought. But if we want to look at different roles with the Planning Commission that require staff support, then we've got to get that into the work plan.
So that the following question, of course, is, Scott, is what are we doing with all of this stuff? I mean, we're going to say, commissioners, tell us what you think about affordable housing. Is that what you're seeing this meeting being?
No, I see this as informing on our work plan. Whatever we decide here is informing on our work plan, and I see that then informing on the board's deliberation on that work plan. And the board has indicated that they want to send that work plan back to the Planning Commission for their comments, which is brand new. And I'm excited about that again, as the Planning Commission is the bridge to the public. And so, but I think we could simply ask the board, are you satisfied with our role? Would you like it? I mean, they're all about enhanced communication and transparency. Well,
and they're all new, too.
And they're new, but they, you know, they're trying to satisfy a lot of needs that they see, and this could fill one of those needs.
I love what you said. You know, this is a lot of great ideas, and it actually reminded me of something that you had asked on the May 6th meeting regarding, you know, like PROS plan. This is a lot of really great ideas. Where do we start and what do we do, you know, and it requires staff and time and planning and things like that. And something that I'm a big proponent of is not recreating the wheel. And so, you know, with some of these things, there are existing case studies that are absolutely able to be duplicated, you know, with other communities, even within our state, so that way we have it local enough. But trying to make it as realistic as possible and kind of following playbooks of successful other municipalities and things like that make these things so much more tangible and real and possible. It does take a little bit more staff and planning, but it also, we have playbooks that we can follow too. And I think it brings us like just that much more close to it, to these outcomes. And, I think that's something that's important when we do have an opportunity to sit down with the board of commissioners to talk about that. Like, this is very real. It's very doable. Here's a similar municipality that's done something exactly like this before, and we can just put our own flavor to it that fits our community. So it kind of can meet in the middle between our existing role now and that activist role as well. So just a comment to that, nothing actionable.
Can I add, what have others done to this?
We heard today in spades that the public can be interested in programs. A lot of it negative today. But how do we improve public participation? How do we get them involved? And there was a lot of talk about not having a 30% draft that they wanted immediately to a 60 or 90% draft, which says public isn't involved and more, they should be more.
And Alan, you had mentioned in the past, like, more remote
just
meetings.
Go to them. I'm just looking for ways to get more comment. This is the biggest group we've had in.
Yeah, and over the past decade, I'm always shocked at the public hearing point. How many people come in and say, you didn't tell us, we didn't know, we weren't involved, and yet you guys, as you prep for the public hearing, show us all these places that we were ready and available and exposed and open for business and comment and feedback. And were those rooms empty? Like, there's a almost like a marketing and advertising gap Because it sure sounds like you guys had a lot of rooms open and nobody in them, and they all came tonight to say we didn't know. So, and I've been hearing that for over a decade now. Yeah. So something is severely wrong with how we notify the public of our process. And then I would argue, and maybe this is just for all the new commissioners, that I think we really need to understand where within the purview, within the lines, within the bumpers of the bowling lane, we have the ability to affect change. And the reason I say that is so many times we hear from DCD, and I'm paraphrasing for the sake of making the point, you know, community council or, you know, regional council made us do it, or the state made it do it, or, okay, if we're getting top-down information as to why we didn't have a choice, then I find myself saying, why am I here? This is just a puppeteering exercise so that you can check a box. And so to the new commissioners, I would suggest that we ask regularly and fairly insistently, what is my role? How can I affect change? And what do we have the legal right to do and not to do? Now, I do know that we all are probably owed something as simple as Robert's Rules of Orders experience practice, you know, getting a quick reminder on how that works for meetings. For those that this is your first role in public servant leadership. But then at a higher level, I think us understanding, are we allowed to push back on DCD, or are we just supposed to let them present and nod and smile and agree and get things to the next checkbox in your sequence? Because you do hear people say, why did we see this at 60%? Or why are we just hearing about public comment and it's all due tomorrow night at 5 p.m.? So, and anyway, my point just being that I want the commissioners to start asking those questions, because you want to know what your job is and where you can affect change.
And more importantly is, if this is all state down, how are the commissioners getting together with the other counties and pushing legislation the other way?
Well, I'd like to just follow on what you said, Alan, in terms of getting more input. But I think we got a lot of good feedback tonight in terms of when you do provide impact, is that, or information, is that information processed ever? And if you look at, they said they had parks tonight, 477 comments. You look at the matrix of what the Parks Department response was to 477 comments, not one single entry didn't start with no change. We are not changing anything. And so I have just, from the public's point of view, so there were 477 people who said, look, here's an idea, and not one of them was worth changing a draft document. And that's something we can do and say, wait a minute, you know, we're not listening to the, again, we are not going to be the ones who say just check a box and do that. So in terms of following on with Alan's thought, how do we make sure that the public is being not just opportunity to hear, but listen to?
Just a point of clarification on that, and I appreciate your comments there. I just want to call attention to the draft PROS plan edit tracking document that is posted online. And in that matrix, it does show changes that they have made from public comment. So it's not just blanket, you know, ignore all. I just wanted to state that. That document is available online.
My second is a bit to echo a little bit of what we've heard all from Alan, Ashley, Aaron, and even more specifically David's last point, and it's to maybe look at some type of carrot and stick incentive approach to maybe not necessarily remodeling, but finding a way to preserve and refurbish both residences and commercial buildings. We have a lot of them that are severely outdated throughout the county, and it is, one, extremely expensive, more from the commercial side, to bring pressure on the property owner to bring those up to code so that they can be occupiable. And what happens in some cases is they don't get addressed at all, and it's easier for maybe the landlord or property owner to just sit on them. I know I can point to a few examples just even in Port Orchard here. I see the same in other residences, boarded up, trashed. Even if they're not leveled, at some point maybe they do get leveled in for an apartment building or something, but lots of areas, with, I'm sure we've all seen, that are kind of abandoned houses or abandoned shopping centers, even more so now with trends of the economy. But so kind of to echo.
You want me to, what would you like me to add to this more specifically?
I think in that spirit of preserving, and I would just add maybe the commercial element to it, commercial okay. building, since those are typically much larger and of different material. Yeah, if there is a way to, and again, other jurisdictions and municipalities have had that kind of carrot and stick incentive to update, and maybe looking at some of those if they're interested in entertaining that. A big one, again, going back to Alan's point of reducing regulation, you know, to try and take a 1970s house and put it up to 2021 building code would be extremely expensive. So, and not going so far as to not make them safe or hurting public health in some cases or whatever it may be. I think there's some lenience that they can have on that within the confines, obviously, of the law. Even again, I've got other ideas about maybe how that they could do that, but I'll leave it at just, again, echoing. That would be my second.
Unfortunately, this is a short meeting we were going to have with the commissioners. About an hour, hour and a half.
It'll be a 1 hour meeting.
So we got to make sure that we're doing something that's corralable.
Yeah.
I like the idea that you've got up there. What do the commissioners want out of us? I think that's an important point.
So why don't we get through the last two and then we can start winnowing this list down? Does that sound good? I don't disagree.
Aaron? With any other comments?
No, just a break at 2.5 hours.
Why don't we get through Dave's comment and then up to the chair?
Okay. David?
No more from me.
Now, we have a second session on this before the meeting in June, right?
Well, I was hoping we could take care of this tonight. The end of the meeting would result in what forward do you want to take to the Board of County Commissioners?
Well, I was just reacting to the fact that we're getting late here is all.
Hold on one sec. So here's an idea. Here's an idea. I think that'll work. We can make it work. Why don't you let us type this up and send this back out to you?
Okay.
And then let's decide at the next meeting. I think that'll give you a chance to think, marinate some of this stuff, and then come back.
But my comment would be we want to have things that we, A, can discuss, and, B, have meaning to a discussion between us and the board.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the purpose of this whole drill.
Yes, yes, meaningful discussion.
So we're done with this for tonight then?
I think I've got enough that I can take away and send back out right away so that you guys have something you can actually look at and not figure out what I was trying to say or read my writing.
Would it be out of place to do some kind of, when you do that, to do some kind of ranking order for us to be able to do as far as maybe a survey from all of us when you type that up so that we can obviously not dismiss it at the next time to talk about it, but something that we could, hey,
sure.
Here's how we would rank these items maybe as level of importance.
Yeah, you know what I will do is I will take this to the director, and I'll say, hey, why don't you roughly prioritize what you think we ought to talk about, and then we'll let the Planning Commission make
it. You have to be very careful about giving him work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can offer that if that's okay with you folks.
Oh, that'd be fine.
Okay.
That'll get
it's going to be tough.
Yeah, or even I mean, as we're supposed to vote on these, sorry, and perfectly okay with that, but as we're supposed to vote on these, correct?
In the end, yeah.
It's got to be our submission to them.
Yeah, do we rank them individually when you send this out? Is there a way, is that a plausible?
We got to be very careful when we get into a public meeting. And
yeah. Oh, okay, yep.
Yep.
You're correct. Yep, you're right.
Fact that we're doing this open mic now.
Yes, that you were. I apologize. Apologize. Newbie.
Okay. Any other comments on this?
Oh, I thought David had his hand raised.
He does have his hand raised.
Sorry, and to Aaron's point, I do agree about 2.5 hours. Sorry. I had a question about public comment going forward on things like this with like doodle polls, like offline where we don't communicate with each other, but staff sends it out. We like click through it, and then you guys take it and make an analysis of it. Is that?
So I was thinking about exploring some tools to help you with that, but I don't know what that looks like, and I don't know if Doodle Poll is okay or not. I've never tried it with the Planning Commission.
Is this a forgiveness versus permission issue?
It could be. It could be. Yeah. Let's look into that, because if that's the case, then we can doodle poll our way into the next meeting and then just show the results.
That might be a good way to start.
I think so. We'll see if we can make that fly.
Anything more on this area of discussion?
No, just great ideas. It's inspiring that this group of volunteer citizen reps are passionate about the county. Yeah.
This drill just for itself is valuable. Just to have this discussion.
I agree.
Okay. Which brings us to the good of the order. Anything else?
Actually, Chair, there's another general public comment period.
Oh, sorry. I don't see anybody here. Martha's here. Does Martha have a comment?
Will you please officially open the general public comment,
okay.
Chair?
The next item on the agenda is the general public comment period. Do I have any public comments? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment period. Are there any comments for the good of the order?
I just have one comment. Maybe people think about one of the things we did a couple of years ago was start the 2 comment periods at the start and the end so people get more chance to participate. What happens though with a public hearing is what happened tonight, and it's happened twice this year, and that's that people try to testify about the public hearing with the start of the general comments, and that is a disaster because they're not part of the record. There's legal consequence if you're not part of the record. I'd like to maybe consider when we're having a public hearing not having the first comment period. And that way people don't try to testify and they miss their legal rights in terms of appeals and that sort of thing. So just something to think about, maybe talk about.
Or even a clarification piece in there that this is general public comment if you have an item of public hearing.
Well, Alan did that tonight, but it doesn't register because you're so focused
on
doing your presentation.
Correct.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just something to consider.
Yeah, let us talk about that a little bit, because then there's a reciprocal effect, which is now they've got to wait till the end of a meeting.
Yeah. I thought we did pretty good on timing tonight. For everybody stuck to pretty close to 3.
Well, again, the people meet in 3 minutes. I mean, I don't know when that's happened.
No other general comments?
For the good of the order, I would just maybe argue, and maybe I'm just saying this facetiously, but if you were to add all of our volunteer hours, I would actually question, why do I have to whittle this down to four topics? And why do we only get 60 minutes once a year?
Both good questions.
Let's add that to the list.
Just saying, I mean, for what we do for the county, a little airtime and not being told to trim it down before we even get there might be nice.
Maybe what we can talk to the board about is a second meeting annually.
Particularly as the first one is a get to know you, the second one might be more productive.
Well, I think the second one will probably center around the work plan, if I can guess what that might look like. Now, I say that with the caveat that the board may already have a lot of ideas that we just don't know about that they want long range to work on.
But they could tell us.
Yes, that's what we're trying to promote.
Any other comments? Good of the order? 8 o'clock on the nose, meeting adjourned. All right.
Yeah, no, the old tradition.